Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Did you know that we're officially back in a buyer's market? That's right. Even though interest rates continue to rise, they are causing prices to fall. So there's finally room for you to do regular real estate investor things that we couldn't do for so long, like gasp, negotiate, make lower offers, ask for sellers to cover some of your closing costs. So it's a really great time to buy in terms of being able to get a lower purchase price and being able to negotiate. So if you're looking for your first or next short-term rental, it's a perfect time to reach out to us at the Short Term Shop. Let our team of agents in any of our true vacation market destinations help you find the perfect investment. Jump on over to theshorttermshop.com and click Get Connected to get started. We are brokered by eXp Realty. See y'all over there. Hey guys, welcome back to the Short Term Show. We've got a really exciting guest today. I know you guys love data and analysis. You're always asking for more of it. So we have brought you a data and analysis guest. We have John Bianchi, the Airbnb data guy, and he's got a lot of cool information to share with you today. So I'll go ahead and introduce him so we can get started. How's it going, John?
Good. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it. Looking forward to being here.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Let's start there.
Okay, sounds good. So I'm the head of data for TechFester. If anyone doesn't know who TechFester is, we're a short-term rental investment fund. So we pool money together and buy short-term rentals. We've raised $36 million in our first year and had to purchase about 75-ish properties. And it's my job to analyze every single market that we might be potentially going into, then figure out what is the absolute best thing that we can purchase within that market, and then figure out how to maximize the revenue of every single individual property that we do get through different amenities and features and design and style and stuff like that. So that's what I do during the day. That's my day-to-day job. I also have 3 free Airbnb data-related courses on YouTube that people can go through. About 13,000 people have gone through one of them. And it's going to pretty well teach you the basics of everything you need to know about Airbnb data, how to understand it. And then on top of that, I also have an Airbnb data consulting business where I help people, I provide these reports that will help people do exactly what I do on a day-to-day basis, essentially rip apart an entire market and find the most profitable location and figure out how to maximize your revenue. And so that's kind of like what I do in the evenings. And that a little bit more credibility as well is that I did have an Airbnb business, an arbitrage and management business in Chicago. Got up to about 15 locations, all 4 bedrooms, large homes, and then COVID came, wiped away all of that, and I was able to sell off all of the contracts, luckily, which was kind of a bit of a shit show. But anyways, regardless, spun that into what I'm doing now today. So head of data for TechFester, Airbnb data consulting business, 3 free courses on YouTube about Airbnb data. So I live and breathe Airbnb data.
Awesome. Because we have a lot of folks with a lot of questions about particularly AirDNA data. Because it just kind of throws everything at you, doesn't really say, give you any direction on how to look at anything or give you any really structure or ideas of what's included in that data and what does it mean? And does the data know the difference between a blocked night and a booked night? And, you know, there's all these different questions that you see floating around about that as people are trying to figure out, okay, does this make sense to buy this investment property while looking at this data? And they're trying to figure out a lot of things. It's very, very muddy waters out there when it comes to data. So let's talk about a little bit about what you do. Like if you're going to analyze a property, what are you pulling out of that? Because you're using AirDNA data, right? Let's start there.
Yeah. So let's start with the basics, such as I do use AirDNA's data. I have a love-hate relationship with AirDNA. I've spoken with people from AirDNA and they say they want to stay impartial to the data, meaning that they don't want to tell you what to do with it. They're just going to give it to you and you figure it out, right? And that's actually why I have an Airbnb data consulting business, because I realize that a lot of people don't know how to understand the data. And so I provided a lot of free information about like, hey, this is the process that I use to be able to get the answers that I'm looking for within the Airbnb data, right? And the answer is always, it's always one thing. I always tell people I only do one thing, which is figure out exactly how much the home is going to make as an Airbnb, right? That's it. Just that top line number. What can I expect as the revenue? Is it going to be 100,000 or 200,000, right? Anyways, let's get back to AirDNA. It is definitely the best tool out there when it comes to Airbnb data. There's a lot of bad data on it, and they provide a lot of averages, and averages are completely useless. For the most part, averages are completely useless, right? If I'm trying to figure out exactly how much individual property is going to make, and I take the averages of all the four bedrooms within a market to figure out what that's going to be completely useless, because there's the true revenue is going to depend on all the tiniest little features, such as like, do I have two living rooms? Do I have a backyard? How big is my backyard? What is the pool like? Do I have a pool heater? Like, all these little things are really going to determine what the end revenue is going to be. So I hate averages for the most part, unless I'm trying to determine one market over another market. But AirDNA data in general can be very useful. You just have to know how to sort through it, right? So kind of to answer your question there, which is how do I go and determine how much a property is going to make? Like, what is that process that I go through to get to that answer? The first thing you have to understand is how to pull out good data and how to understand what good data is versus bad data when it comes to AirDNA, because about 80 to 90% of the data in there is actually useless. It's completely useless. It's not real data. There's something wrong with it one way or another. And so first thing I want to explain is how to understand the difference between good data and bad data, right? Or what is good data? So good data, right, is somebody who's been an active host for almost an entire year, at least over 250 days. They've been a true active full-time host. They've been running it as an actual business, right? That's sort of step one. That's the first criteria. The second criteria is AirDNA needs to have been tracking that listing for that entire time period, right? Now, the way that AirDNA's algorithm works is that they go into the calendar of every single Airbnb every single day, and they record the calendar. And so if you have an available day and it's up for $100 that night, they'll record that, and then they'll come back the next day and they see that it's blocked off. They go, okay, you got a $100 booking, record that. And then they're going to keep doing this over and over and over and over again, right? And so there's this little section on AirDNA. It's called days available that shows up that really should say days tracked on AirDNA, because days tracked is truly what they're doing there. We're tracking your calendar every single day. And so if they've been tracking your calendar for over 250 days, right, which is almost a full year, then they have almost your true annual revenue number, right? So one, you need to be a full-time host, or somebody, the person's data that you're tracking needs to be a full-time host, and AirDNA needs to have been tracking them that entire time period, right? And when you get those two, then you have a true annual revenue Airbnb number, right? And then you can actually use that to figure out how much this home is making over the 365 days. Now, the reason why you can't take a home that's only been up for 30 days and take that and use the number that they're providing and times that by 12 is because of seasonality, right? Some seasons, people are making a ton of money. Some seasons, they're making no money. So you can't just take the number and times it by 12. It's going to be way, way off, right? And so out of basics, at the very, very basic of this is that you need to determine what's good data and what's bad data, okay? Once you can do that using those two metrics, then you can start pulling that information out and putting it into a spreadsheet to organize it and to be able to cleanly see, okay, this is just the good data that I'm looking at rather than everything that's in AirDNA. And then from there, you can start making sense of which homes match up best to the home that you're looking to purchase. That was a really long answer, but...
it's very logical. Like, let's start with what you're saying about averages and then we'll get into seasonality. So I agree. Like, you can have a four bedroom property that is absolute junk, and then a four bedroom property that's beautiful and brand new and really well decorated. And they're going to be lumped into that same average when you're looking at the data. So we use at the short term shop, we call it the enemy method, where we're basically going onto Airbnb or Vrbo and you're looking at your enemies or your neighbors or your comps basically. Yep. And saying like, okay, am I above average? Am I below average? Is this property that I'm going to buy better than or worse than these average numbers and these average properties to kind of try and figure that out? Because it is kind of not just a science, but also an art when it comes to analyzing short-term rentals, because it's not just, you know, if you're buying a 20 unit apartment building and the rent is what the rent is every single month until that person moves out, it's a lot easier to analyze than like, okay, well, This property is, while it is a four bedroom, people are willing to pay more because of the location, or they're not going to pay as much because it's kind of junky. It's kind of bottom of the barrel. So it really is difficult to analyze because it isn't art. It's more about like, okay, who's, would you stay in this on vacation? Yeah, I would. Or are other people going to want to? And it's kind of hard to quantify that.
So agreed. And I want to provide your listeners with a way to make that art less confusing, right? Because sometimes when you say it's an art, and I do this all the time where I say it's like an art, it almost makes it like impossible for other people. It's almost like an impossibility to kind of figure out, right? Like I can't draw and I can't sing. There's no way that if I just start drawing right now, I'm eventually going to be able to be an amazing artist, right? And so by saying like, it's an art, you kind of block people off from being able to figure it out. So what I want to try and do is provide the method that I use that gets them to that answer, right?
Yeah, and then I have an analogy about that too. Like, so, I mean, just because you can't play guitar, like you can't play classical guitar, doesn't mean you can't learn bar chords and be really good at punk rock. So it's really just about learning how to do it than necessarily being the most talented at it. 100%. So everyone has the ability to learn to do it.
Correct. Repetition. Right. And I do it all day, every day. So like I'm able to tell the tiniest little differences, especially when I'm in a market. I can tell you like the tiniest little things and be like, oh, it's going to make, that makes a property useless. You know what I mean? Like I looked at a living room 2 days ago that was a little bit too small. And I was like, this home's garbage. We're not going to be able to make any money from it. Cause I could tell that the size of that living room in comparison to the size of all the other living rooms, it was actually not going to work out and hit the numbers that we wanted to, because we wouldn't be able to put in the stuff we needed in that living room to be able to compete with our competition. And so then therefore the home's useless, right? Like, but that's because I do this all day, every day, right?
Yeah.
But you, for the most part, that's a very nuanced, tiny little issue that most people are not going to run into, right? So to kind of like take this away and make it less of an art, right? But at the same time, I did want to start off by telling a couple different stories here of like why it's so important to not use averages, right? So, and to use the process I'm about to explain, I always like to tell a little story to kind of set a little fear so that people understand how important this stuff is, right? But we have two homes in Scottsdale, right? The fund has two homes in Scottsdale. They're not too far away from each other. They're both five bedrooms. They're both really well done. They're designed by the same people. They look amazing. They almost have the exact same set of features. However, one makes $60,000 more than the other, right? The only difference is one key feature. And I can't give away that key feature on this call because I'll get fired, but right, it's one key feature, right? There's one little difference between those two. And if without knowing what you're looking at, you'll miss that thing. I mean, if you miss that thing, then you lose $60,000, okay? One that I can give away is I've done a lot of research in Blue Ridge, and I've done all this different analysis on homes with views compared to homes without views, right? And this is something that, you know, probably comes up a ton in a lot of different markets. And this is a very obvious one, but I can actually put like a dollar amount to the difference that that will make, right? So if you have a unobstructed, beautiful view, I think you call it a majestic view,
yeah,
right? A majestic view. If you have a majestic view compared, so if you take in a cabin, take, you know, say the two cabins are identical, let's say, right? But one has a majestic view and one does not. There is a $50,000 a year difference between those two cabins, right? And this is in Blue Ridge specifically. And I know this for a fact because I've gone through every single piece of data in Blue Ridge multiple different times and I've recorded this. Now, the interesting thing is that you have what I call like a good view. You know what I mean? Not like an amazing or a majestic view, but just like a good view.
Maybe yeah, there's I call those cute.
Yeah, cute. There's you don't see like perfect rolling hills, but you have a little bit of like a tree coverage, a little bit, right? But you can still see. That will make you about $20,000 more than a home without a view at all, right? But you're still making $30,000 less than the person who has the unobstructed majestic view, right? And so that's a quantifiable way to put numbers and a return on what the view looks like in comparison to somebody else's, right? And that's just by going through all the data and making sense of it. So anyways, I tell those two stories to really explain that these tiny little features can make a world of difference to the amount of money that your home is going to end up making, right? And that $30,000 difference could be all of your profit. So it's important to like be able to tell those little differences.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so the process that I do, right, to get to that answer It's just simply a matter of taking the good data out of the location from AirDNA, right? So you go into AirDNA, you buy a subscription, and then you start to remove the good data out of AirDNA. So you confirm that it's being tracked for over 250 days. You check to see if there's a review every single month so that you know the person's actually been hosting for an entire year. And then you take that information and you plug it into a spreadsheet, right? And you put in what the annual revenue is, you put in what the days available is, you put in what the which should be days tracked. You put in the occupancy, the average daily rate, the number of guests, the bedrooms, the bathrooms, and the number of beds that they have as well, right? And you also put the host name. You take all that information, you put into a spreadsheet, and then you find another home that also matches up with the home that you're looking at, and you do it again, right? You put another piece of data in there. And then what you want to do is you want to get somewhere between 5 to 10, if you can get to 15 pieces of data that all match up, that are kind of similar to the home that you're looking to purchase, you're going to have a lot of information in there, right? So you have all of these, you have, let's say, 10 different Airbnbs that are all four bedrooms within Blue Ridge, and you're looking at a home that's a four bedroom in a Blue Ridge, right? So you have all this data. What you do is you then organize it from who's making the most to who's making the least, okay? And the reason why this little piece here is so important of organizing it that way, and then reopen every single listing to see them in order from who's making the most to who's making the least. The reason this is so important is because you're going to be able to see the pattern in the trend in the data that is proving why one home is making more than the other, right? You're able to visually see, like, okay, the cabin's actually becoming less modern, right? As the homes start making less money, I can see that the cabin is actually getting older, or I can see that the view is actually starting to get worse as these homes start to make less, right? And you, what I do is I make notes on every single last little detail. So, like, what does the view look like? What does the cabin look like? How old is the cabin? What kind of deck and patio does it have? Does it have a backyard? Does it have a fire pit? Does it have a hot tub, right? I write down, and for every single one of those listings, I'll write out every single feature and amenity that I see. Like, how well is it signed? How well are the photos done? Is this by a management company? Is it not by a management company, right? And I've got all of this information. What ends up happening is that it becomes extremely clear where your home is actually going to fall within that ranking, right? But based off of two things. One, the bones of your property, right? What I always call the bones is, like, the, if you have two living rooms or if you have one living room, that's the bones, that's the structure of your property, right? Like, there's nothing you can really do about it. And you'll know which home, you'll know where your home falls within that ranking. And then on top of that, the next sort of feature is, you know how well you're going to put it together. You know how well you're going to take the photos. You know how well you're going to design it. You know how much money you're going to put into these extra amenities and features. And so you know where you're going to kind of lie with that as well. And by knowing those two things and seeing all of these homes in order of who's making the most to who's making the least, you're going to very clearly know which comp you lie closest to, which ones you'll beat, and which ones you're going to lose to. And then that's what's going to give you that perfect, like, okay, this home is lines up with comp 5. It's not going to beat comp 4, but it can definitely beat comp 6. Therefore, I'm going to make $80,000 a year off of this property, right? Like, out of basics, that's how you get to that top line number and figure that out. Does that make sense? Thank you. You got the dog barking.
Yeah, my little dog is trying to kill another dog that's walking by my office window. Sorry about that, guys.
No worries. But I know that's a really, really detailed way of explaining it. I just wanted to go into a lot of detail to explain it, because a lot of the time people will kind of brush over or kind of give, like, a gist of the explanation. But those little details of putting in an order of who's making the most, who's making the least, reopening all the listings so that you can see them in that order, taking notes on every single one of those are the things that truly allow you to know if your home will make $60,000 more because of the one key feature in comparison to the other one, right?
Yeah. And I appreciate you giving all of that detail. And I'm sure all the listeners do too, because, you know, when it comes to data, the more detail, the better. So everybody appreciates you going into that detail. So please continue going into that much detail.
Okay.
I want to hit on one thing that you said about seasonality, which I see a lot of new investors get really tripped up on seasonal stuff, like, especially right now, or maybe a little bit previous. So probably in the past 2 to 3 months. So we're recording this right before Christmas in 2022, but people who are going to close, like, in November, December, especially in beach markets, but in a lot of the mountain markets too, when they go on Airbnb and they start looking, because that's what everybody does outside of the AirDNA data, they go on Airbnb and they start looking at other people's calendars. Sometimes they're doing the enemy method. Sometimes they're doing other things, but, and they're like, oh my God, nobody's getting booked. Why this? Oh, and they flip out and they're like, why am I even looking at this? And we're like, dudes, it's the off season. That's why nobody's booked. Like, let's calm down. And they think like, how does anybody make money? Because they're looking at, you know, November, December in a beach market, for example, and saying, oh my God, how are these people affording these houses? Because they're not making any money. Well, guys, it's because it's the off season. So you kind of have to make sure you're looking at it from an annual basis and not a monthly basis, because that just, it doesn't work.
100%. Like that is, it's all about the annual revenue number, right? Because you have annual expenses. So you have to figure out what the annual revenue number is. And when it comes to short-term rentals, there's peak seasons, there's low seasons, there's mid seasons. It's just how it goes, right? But that just because there's, just because you're not making money during a certain period of time doesn't mean you don't make money over the entire year, right? As an example, like my homes in Chicago, they lost money for 3 to 4 months of the year. They would lose money, right? But we would make so much money during the peak season that it offset the money that we lost. Therefore, we were still walking away with profit, right?
Yeah.
And so it's such a, like, that's a very beginner thing. Like, if you're worried about that, you are like just getting started. You're just getting into this. And then you hear us say that and you go, oh, okay, sounds good. And you never think about it again, right? You're just like, oh, it is what it is, right? But a very easy way to figure out your seasonality of your market or any market that you're considering going into, because it's really good to know the seasonality, is to go into AirDNA, buy the subscription for that specific area that you're looking into, and click on the seasonality section. Now on the left-hand side, it'll say seasonality. You click into it and it'll be beet red for the times when it's peak season, and it'll be dark blue for the times that it's off season, right? This is a great thing to know because of a variety of different reasons. You want to know when the majority of your money is coming in. You want to know if your home is, if you're not getting booked during peak season, there's an issue. If you're not getting booked during slow season, that's fine. That's normal. That's what's supposed to happen, right? It's the most basic thing when it comes to short-term rentals, right? Anyone who's been in it knows it. But it also will allow you to plan ahead or to know what to expect, right? Like as an example, November is like a time in Chicago where everything just shuts off. September, October is almost as good as the summer. But once we hit November, everything just disappears. In the very first year, I didn't know this. And my bookings were terrible in November, like terrible, terrible in November. The second year came around and I actually lowered my prices for November 6 months in advance and was willing to take a huge decrease in November in comparison to October, just simply to get people in there because I knew the season dropped off like crazy right in November. And so my second year around, I ended up making, I think, like double the amount that I did the year prior, just because I was prepared and ready with the accurate prices of what I should have had in there, right? Which is like a great thing for, you know, the 30A market. Maybe you want to get 30-day rentals in your condo. Say you have like a two-bedroom or a one-bedroom condo and you want to get over the slow season, you want to get somebody in there for 90 to 120 days just to cover that slow season. That's something you should be doing 12 months in advance. You know what I mean? Or have it listed 12 months in advance or ready to go with discounts for 30-day bookings, like way in advance. So that when the time does come, you're getting that booking, right? You may not get the booking 12 months in advance, but you'll get it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think also it's important to point out too, when you're talking about snowbirds in the off season of markets like this. I say like this because I'm sitting at 30A right now, underneath one of my vacation rentals. And the size of the property does matter when it comes to snowbirds. Like I've got a big four bedroom in Destin, and that's never going to get a snowbird because it's too big. Nope. Snowbirds, like one bedrooms, two bedrooms. And guys, it is not, I think a lot of people with the whole midterm rental craze are thinking they're going to make a ton of money on snowbirds, like, you know, the travel nurse money, which that's a whole other ball of wax that I have a lot of issues with, thinking that everybody thinking they're going to make a zillion dollars off of one small sect of one profession in every single market. But that's not what we're talking about. Hey guys, if you're enjoying the content of our podcast, but you have additional short-term rental questions, we host a weekly live question session that you guys can join for free. It's at 1 p.m.
Eastern on Thursdays. And if you head over to strquestions.com, you can sign up. So not only am I the host of this show, but I also own and manage my own properties, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have about short-term rental investing. So please join us anytime for a free weekly live Q&A on Zoom. Sign up at strquestions.com. So snowbirds are looking for deals. They're not going to be paying, you know, 2x, 3x what the normal monthly rent would be if it were a long-term rental. So keep that in mind if you're buying in a beach market. Snowbirds are just, you know, they're just in there to hopefully put a dent in your mortgage, maybe make you break even, but they're not going to be like a true midterm, like corporate rental type deal at all.
And are you referring to the four bedrooms when you say that?
Like one and two beds. You're not going to get snowbirds period in a four bed. It has to be a one or a two, probably even a one. Cause most of the time it's just like a couple. So you're probably not going to get them in a big property. In a big property, you should expect and be prepared to not be booked in the off season in a beach market, like in 30A. And that's okay. You don't have to. I see a lot of people this time of year going on Facebook groups saying, what are creative ways for me to get booked? It's the off season. And I have a five bedroom. And I'm like, you're just not going to.
Yeah. It's one of these things where I think this is also like a beginner thing where the first year around, you're like, I want to try and get booked during the slow season, even if it's just like a $2,000 a month, you know, person who's just going to stay in there and cover a little bit of the mortgage. Right. And then the next year comes around and they realize it's actually less work if I just don't take that $2,000. Yeah. I've already made enough money. I don't have to like repair everything after they've stayed in there for 120 days because they're going to trash the place and all of this different stuff. And you're just like, you know what? Not worth it. I'm just going to let this place sit empty. Right.
Yeah. We just chill on our beach properties in the slow season and catch our breath and prepare ourselves for spring break.
fix everything. Let it sit there. Like if you have somebody in there, it's going to stay for 120 days. They're going to break stuff, right? Especially if they like bring in their dogs and cats and whatnot. Like it's going to be annoying, to be honest. And eventually it's just not worth the extra money. It's easier to just let it sit empty and then make all your money and call it a day, right? Because it is a job. It's a business, right? Running these homes, and it can be a lot of work. And so anyways,
It back to the analysis that you guys should not be freaking out in the off season, needing to get booked. You shouldn't need to get booked in the off season if you've analyzed correctly on an annual basis on what you should be able to make during the on season. And an example that I give about that people are probably tired of hearing about is, so we have, is getting too caught up in occupancy rate. And and like the example that I have is, we've got a four bedroom in the Smokies, which has like an 80% occupancy rate. Our four bedroom in Destin has about a 65% ish occupancy rate. And if you're only looking at that, you're going to buy that Smokies place every single time, which the Smokies one was a great deal and it does do exactly what we need it to do. But in terms of what they make of revenue, the Destin house makes $60,000 a year more than the Smokies house at a much lower occupancy rate. So you have to kind of keep that in mind, that occupancy rate isn't everything when it comes to analysis.
It's not the end all be all. That's something that I get all the time too, where people are like, you're looking into a market that has like a 50% occupancy rate. And I'm like, yeah, I am, because I'm looking at the annual revenue number. You know what I mean? I'm not looking at what the occupancy number is. I could care less about that. I could care less about the ADR as well. All I care about is, are these homes that are there, how much are they making over the full year, regardless of how much they're getting booked? How much are they making over the full year? If I find 10 homes that are all making $100,000, and the home price in that market is between 300 and 500,000, I could care less what the occupancy is. You know what I mean? I'm going to be buying those homes all day long. If anything, if the occupancy is only like 50%, that's amazing. 50% occupancy, you can make $100,000 a year. I'm not saying those are real numbers, but like, if you get lower occupancy and can still make a good amount of money over the full year, that just means you do less work and make more money than the other markets where you're 90% occupied and you only make $100,000 a year, right? Or whatever that magical profit number is, right? So I couldn't agree more with that. I get that all the time too. And it kind of drives me nuts. I hate like averages. I hate occupancy. I hate ADR. I'm just like, what's the annual revenue number? That's all I care about.
That's music to my ears.
Yeah.
it really is about the annual revenue number. That's it.
Yeah. And I mean, like the reality, once again, I I'm not trying to bash on anybody by saying this, but that is a beginner question. You know what I mean? It's something that people who are just getting started, they're like, well, what about the occupancy? I'm worried about not being occupied and blah, 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 right? But then anybody who's had an Airbnb for a year, and has some experience with it, they fully understand that that's not as big of a deal as what you would think it would be, right? So anyways, it's one of these things that over time you'll learn it as you continue to go. It's just how this market works.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what else have we not talked about that you feel like people need to understand when it comes to analyzing these things?
Oversaturation.
Oh yeah. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
That's the buzzword.
Yeah, exactly. Oversaturation. Everyone's so worried about oversaturation and it, you know, destroying a market, and they're not doing any they're not running any numbers on this. I know you and I have already talked about this before, but like, it drives me insane when somebody's like, there's 8,000 listings there, it's oversaturated. I go, really? Is it just because it has 8,000, or can that location support 8,000 listings? Right. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share my method to figure out if it's oversaturated or not with your audience. And so then everyone can shut up about it.
I did see while you're pulling that up to share your screen, I did see recently on a Facebook group, somebody said, hey, where should I buy my first short-term rental? And somebody said, come to Florida. And then there was a one word comment underneath it that just said oversaturated, period. Like, the entire state of Florida is oversaturated. And I was like, okay, cool guys.
Honestly, like when I see that stuff, and I hear people talking about oversaturation, I just go, you know what? It's another person who's not going to enter into the Airbnb space. And that means that we're, you know, they're the less people that start, the more money that we'll end up making, right? So if somebody's like terrified about oversaturation, it's like, cool, sounds good. Looks like you're not going to enter, and I'll just continue to open up more and take the business that you would have taken from me anyways. But anyway, so to explain oversaturation without like showing too much right now, I just to verbally explain it, it's all about supply and demand, right? So to define oversaturation, it is when there become so many homes that each individual home starts to make less the following year than they did the year prior, right? So if I was making $100,000 last year, and then all of a sudden there's, you know, 1,000 more homes in my market, and now I'm only making 90,000, that's sort of the start of oversaturation, right? However, if 1,000 more homes show up in my market, and then I'm still making $100,000 a year, then that means that the market's not oversaturated, right? Now, generally, what you need to do is you need to see how this works out over all of the homes, okay? And there's a variety of different ways you can go and figure this out. I will share my screen, and I'm trying to figure out the simplest way that I can possibly explain this. But if you are, so we're on AirDNA right now, okay? And if you own the data, so you paid $100 or whatever it costs for your specific market, you can get this information. And if you're going to be going into a market and starting an Airbnb, it's worth spending the $100. But what you want to do is you want to come down to this rental growth chart, which is on the overview tab. And you want to look at this chart because it's going to show you how many listings have either come into that market or gone away from that market, right? Right now we're looking at Nashville, and you can see that there's a huge dip that happened right when COVID happened, which in every single market, you're going to see that. And then you can see that it sort of sat flat for a while. And then once from Q3 to Q3 of last year to this year, you can see that it's just been steadily increasing, right? And so what I'm trying to show you is that what you want to do is you want to figure out how many listings were there last year, and then how many listings are there now, okay? And that's going to tell you how many more listings have shown up. So what we're doing is we're figuring out the increase in supply here. We're figuring out what that number is. And last year there were 6,200 listings, and now there's 8,000 listings, which is an increase of about 20%, 20 to 25% within that range, right? So now we know that there's been about 20% ish more listings in Nashville in year over year. Okay. Now what matters is how much has the revenue increased during that time period as well. Okay. And so what you do is you then click into the revenue section on the left-hand side over here, and you scroll all the way down to the total market revenue, which is the bottom chart. And what you simply want to do is you just want to see what was the revenue this year during Q3, and what was the revenue last year during Q3 of that time period. And what that's going to tell you is how much the revenue has either increased or decreased, okay? And so I can see that last year in September, the revenue was $9 million. And if I go to September of or sorry, last year it was 6.9. This year it's 9 million, which is an increase of 2 million over 7 million, which is roughly, I'm going to get this wrong. It's over 20%. It's about 22 to 25% increase in revenue. Let me make sure I get this right, because I have it set up here. So if you take this number divided by that number, about 30% increase. Okay. So what you can see here, just so for anyone that's looking, there is a increase in supply of 22%. Okay. But there was an increase in revenue of 30%, which therefore means that each individual home was actually making 8% more year over year, even though there was 22% more listings in Nashville. So if I was making $100,000 last year, I'm now making $108,000.
Even with all the- telling me we can go into AirDNA and actually figure out if a market is saturated. We don't just have to yell at each other on Facebook groups and make things up. You can actually go look that information up.
Yeah, you can use the numbers to prove people wrong. Isn't that the best thing in the world?
Yeah. And guys, we are going to have this, as with all of our episodes, up on our YouTube channel. So if you want to go watch his screen share on where to find that information on the AirDNA dashboard, then make sure you just hit our YouTube channel. It's The Short-Term Shop, obviously, and you'll be able to see that. But yeah, that's really interesting. And I think that that is a very cool tip. I think a lot of people are going to go do that, like probably the second they listen to this.
Good. And like, I want it just to summarize, right? You're just trying to figure out how much has the supply increased and how much has the revenue increased, right? You want the revenue and the supply to increase ideally at the same pace, right? Because as more listings come in, there should be more revenue. And as long as there's more revenue coming in, then you know that each individual home is still making roughly the same amount, right? Now, in that scenario, the supply increased by 22%, but if the revenue only increased by 10%, then all the homes are making 12% less than they were the year prior, right? And that's where you go, okay, we're seeing some oversaturation in this market. Do I need to be concerned about a 12% dip in this market, and is it going to continue to get worse, right? And that's sort of something to keep in mind as well as you're going through it. But yeah, so you can go into AirDNA and you can use that process to figure that out.
So would you say that if you're analyzing a market and you find that it is saturated or oversaturated or whatever that word is, I have a problem with the redundancy of the word oversaturated. I don't know if I'm right or wrong on that, but it bothers me.
I've never thought of that, but I'm pretty sure you're right. Because when you say
I'm not going to claim being right. I'm just saying that I have a pet peeve. But okay. So if you do find that that in a market there, the number of available rentals has increased more over the past year than the revenue, does that mean that you shouldn't buy there or that there's not any opportunity there?
No, not at all. And not at all. Like it's something to be concerned about. It's something to go, okay, that's interesting. Right. I think we talked about this too, where the thing is that if a market does become saturated or oversaturated, that means that there's a ton of demand in that market, right? There is a lot of people who want to open up Airbnbs there because there's a lot of people who want to travel there, right? So that everyone knows that there's a lot of opportunity there. Me personally, I love that more than anything. I love a market with a lot of demand. And the reason being is because a market with a ton of demand means that there's people are willing to pay a lot more to go there than they are to an area that doesn't have a lot of demand. That's super simple, right? But the reason I love that market is because I know how to Airbnb better than most people, right? I know how to put together a listing that is going to be superior than about 90% of the listings out there, whether I have a one bedroom or a five bedroom. I'm going to figure out how to analyze every single last person who's in the top of that market. I'm going to figure out all the little things that they're doing that's working. I'm going to take all of those things and I'm going to add it to my listing, right? And I'm going to put together a listing that is going to be superior than about 90% of the listings out there. So therefore, I will have one of the best listings for my sized unit within a market that has a crazy amount of demand that people are willing to pay a crazy amount for, right? And as more and more people flood in, that's great. But a lot, what's going to happen is the bad listings, the ones who take phones or photos with their iPhone, the ones who don't know how to design it really well, who didn't put in a hot tub and didn't put in XYZ, they're the ones that are going to feel that hurt more than everybody, right? They're going to be not getting booked, because even though there's a lot of demand for this market, the demand maybe doesn't meet all of the supply, but it does meet that top 10 to 20, 30, 40% of the homes that exist. So in other words, what I mean is, if there's 1,000 listings and only 500 of them are getting booked, you could consider that to be an oversaturated market. However, if I have one of those listings in the top 500, then I'm still good. I'm still getting booked. Yeah. So I'm not worried about it at all. And to prove this out right now, the company that I work for, TechFester, that's exactly what we do. And everyone's talking about the Airbnb bust right now. And everyone's like, we're not getting booked, I'm not making any money, whatever it is. We don't feel the Airbnb bust at all. We're actually making more money right now than we've ever made.
And yeah, we're about 4% up this year from last year ourselves.
Exactly. It's because you know what you're doing. You know how to put together a listing, right? Even when we go into a recession and there's less people traveling, some people are still going to travel. And the listings that they're going to choose are going to be the ones at that top 25%, 10%, right? You don't have to be luxury to be in that top percentile.
Yes.
You
just have I think that's something that a lot of people make mistakes about, is thinking that they have to be an ultra luxury property to be in that top few percent. And you don't. I would only call really one of my properties luxury, and it's really big and it is nice and redone, but it's still, I don't know. It's not beachfront. It's a few blocks off. So it's debatable whether it's luxury, but all the rest of my other ones are not. They're just cute, clean, comfortable places to stay that are, you know, we've got everything updated and we run it really well, but they're not like the nicest, fanciest, you know, two bedrooms in existence.
No, we have a lot of locations that would not be considered luxury at all, and they're beating the luxury listings, right? Now, mind you, if you gave me a luxury listing and I amped it up the same way I did with something else, I'm obviously going to do pretty well with it, right? But for the most part, most people who have luxury properties have a lot of money, you know what I mean, in the first place. So they're not trying to peel every single penny that they can from the Airbnb listing, and they've just put up a nice luxury home, whereas you've tried to peel every penny you possibly can from that home, and so you're doing everything you possibly can to maximize the revenue off that, right? Which is tends to be why you can beat those properties.
Yeah,
so, totally. Yeah, big time.
Don't never underestimate the number of people that half-ass everything.
Oh yeah, that's actually when I first got started. So like 2017, I remember saying, I'm like, I love going into this because all the competition sucks. I'm like, my competition is a bunch of people who have no idea how to put together a good listing. And I said that in 2017. And I talk to people nowadays and they say the exact same thing to me. They're like, yeah, I'm excited to get into it because most of these listings are really bad and we can beat them. I'm like, yeah, it was the same thing 5-6 years ago. You know what I mean? And anyway, so it's just, most people don't know what they're doing on Airbnb. Most people just have an extra home. They throw it on Airbnb, or they hear about it and they put it on Airbnb. But the people like us who study Airbnb and we study hospitality and we study what drives revenue and we understand these things, we can figure out the ways to make it work. We can figure out the ways to cash flow. And anyone who's listening, you put in a little bit of extra work, you put a little bit of extra love into it, you study the data, you study your competition, you put together a better listing, you're going to be able to win, right? And that's the reality of it.
Boom. Mic drop.
Mic drop.
Well, on that note, we're at the end of the show, and I think we're going to have a part two with you, because there's been a lot of really good information here, and I feel like we're going to have a lot of questions and maybe we need to do a part two, but definitely a Facebook Live and our Facebook group for sure. Anyway, the last three questions of the show that we ask everyone who comes on the show, first one, what advice would you give 20-year-old John if you knew then what you know now?
Consistency. So I think the number one thing, just consistently showing up day in and day out to whatever I'm trying to do and sticking with it. That was something that definitely took me a while to learn, and I would kind of jump from one thing to another. But just sticking with one thing over a long period of time and mastering it has been the greatest way for me to benefit in life, in a sense of financially and relationships and everything, is just consistency. So that's something that I still tell myself pretty well every single day. It's just like, show up, put your head down, show up, do the work, you know, day in and day out. So anyways.
That is great advice. And next question, kind of similar, but slightly different because it's more about what's happening today. What advice would you give a new investor who's interested in getting started today?
Yep. Getting started with Airbnb is a three-step process, and that's pretty well it. So step one is regulation. You just learn the regulation of the place you want to go into. Step two is data. If you understand the data and you understand what type of home to buy, what to look for, what kind of features you need, and you understand everything about data, then you can ensure that you're actually going to get a home that will be profitable. Okay. Because that's the most important thing, because the vast majority of homes are not profitable as Airbnbs. So you've got to make sure that the one you're buying is going to cash flow and be a good Airbnb. Then once you've done that and you've purchased a home, then you can figure out the operations. Then you can figure out how to message the guests and how to clean the home. Don't worry about any of that stuff of what softwares to use, what style do I need, anything along those lines, until you understand your regulation and your data and you actually have the location, and then you can figure out how to operate it. Not before. Can't stress that enough.
Also really great advice, man. You've got a lot of great advice. All right. Last question. What is your favorite book that has impacted your mindset?
Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand.
On my bookshelf at home, not here at the office, but that nobody has recommended that yet.
Yeah, that is hands down one of the greatest books. I've read it once and I've listened to it like 5 times.
Oh, wow.
And it's a 60 hour book to listen to.
Yeah, I was going to say it's really, really thick. How long did that take?
Yeah, it takes a lot of time, but what I love about it is that it's a story, but the messages within the story are gold. And another one, maybe The Alchemist. Or
Love
the richest man in Babylon, I think it's called. Yeah, that's those three are really, really good. So
I had a client one time who I was taking her around showing her properties in the Smokies, and she had just been on like some kind of trip in Egypt where I'm going to get my places wrong, but they like rode camels from maybe Morocco to Egypt to look at the pyramids. And she reread The Alchemist on that trip. And I'm that's a perfect place to read that.
No way.
Yeah. y'all don't yell at me if I got my locations wrong, but you know what I mean? You know what I mean, guys?
She was in the desert on a camel reading a book about being in the desert. So
yeah, totally that's the point.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Cool. Well, John, thank you so much for coming on. If anybody wants to follow you, see what you're doing, what you're up to, how can they do that?
So it's all my handles are The Airbnb Data Guy. So if you just look up that or my name, you'll find me on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And the vast majority of my content and pretty well everything that I talk about and teach is on YouTube. I mentioned that at the beginning, got 3 free courses, tons and tons of value on there. Just so everyone knows, like, I'm not taking calls for 2, 3, 4 months. I don't really know if I'm going to be taking calls again moving forward. So if you do want to work with me, I put that
so difficult to get a hold of.
Yeah. So if you do want to get value from me or learn from me, just go to my YouTube. I have everything there. If you do want to get reports from me, which I talked about earlier, that will help you find the most profitable location in your market. You can, when you're on my YouTube, it'll be very clear in the description where the link is to my website. You just click on that and it'll kind of bring you to the reports that I offer. But once again, like, everything is on YouTube. That's the main spot that you want to go and take a look at. And then from there, you'll find the rest of me and everything that I offer.
Awesome. Thank you so much, John. So much valuable information today. And I can't thank you enough for coming on. We'll catch you later.
Yeah. Sounds